With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
It's time to turn your garden into a smart garden on News Radio 830 WCCO. Smart Gardens, an hour of expert advice and answers to all of your lawn and gardening questions. You can call 989-9226 or text us at 81807. Now, here's Denny Law with this week's Smart Garden.
Yes, good morning with Julie Weisenheimer. No, we're Julie Weisenheimer. Yeah, you've heard that before, haven't you?
Too many times
I bet
to count.
You have. Yes, I've heard like
Carl's heard it more than I have because he grew up with this name. I just married into it.
And Sid used to say, Denny Short for years. That was years ago. But Julie Weisenhorn is really with us today from the University of Minnesota.
Getting ready for the fair.
Yes, we're going to be there. You're going to be there 1 week from today.
I'll be there next Saturday, yeah.
Would you wait for me? I'll be there too.
Sure, sure. Good. I'll get you a coffee.
By the way, our Smart Garden Show brought to us by the Yard Outdoor Furniture, that great furniture made right down there in Jordan, Minnesota. They're going to be at the fair too, and we'll talk about that coming up. But as you know, if you're familiar with the show, we tend to get real busy. Julie does a lot of work here, and Mary and Teresa and Sam and everybody else.
The whole gang.
Now, who's going to be with you 1 week from today?
Dr. Eric Watkins,
one
of our turf professors, will be there, and he's always a good time.
So that's 1 week from today.
All right. Yeah.
Well, if you do have a lawn or garden question today, 651-989-9226, or send a text 81807, 81807. Days are getting shorter. And I was telling you that, by the way, those pickles that you gave us, we had them last night.
Nice.
And a lot of them.
Yeah.
Really good.
Yeah, it was always a good, that seems to be a really, we're on a trend of good pickles, Kathy.
You've got to be getting blue ribbons for those things.
Well, we've talked about putting them in the fair, but we've never investigated the logistics about that. I've talked with Grace Anderson, who's a master gardener and works in our plant pathology clinic, and she's a Gedney queen. She literally has won the big Gedney. And I asked her one time, she goes, it's very crazy, you know, what you have to go through. So
is it really?
I don't know if we'd be Gedney queens, but we might enter them. Who knows?
Oh, those are good.
Yeah.
No, you make a couple different kinds.
We make refrigerator pickles and we make dill pickles.
Oh.
Hey, I got to wish my mom and dad a happy anniversary today.
How many is this?
61 years.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm. Happy anniversary, Mom and Dad.
Well, yes.
Glad you got together.
Good God.
I wouldn't be here.
That's right. I'd be by myself. I know. Congratulations. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Well, again, if you have a phone in question for Julie, by all means.
If you have a phone.
If you have a phone, call us. 651-989-9226. Or send a text. We must
be
at the fair now.
We have a couple texts already.
You want to grab one?
Sure,
before we go to the phones?
Somebody's asking about basil. Does planting sweet basil in the ground produce larger leaves than planting in a deck planter? My daughter has, her plant has huge leaves while in the ground. Ours are in a pot, which are small. So actually, that is one of the things that that can influence the size of the plant and including the leaves. So, you know, when you're in the soil, you just have a bigger growing area. You've got more moisture. The soil has got a lot of organic matter mixed in. So, that could be one of the reasons. Could also be the location, more sun.
That's true, yeah.
You know, might be what your daughter put. Maybe she mixed in compost at the beginning, and that adds a lot of lightness to the soil and versus a
couple of different variables.
Yeah, it could be lots of things. But, I think that's probably one of the big reasons.
All right, Julie, back to the phones we go. Ann is calling from Elk River. Good morning, Ann.
Good morning. I have a hardy hibiscus. It's been in the ground about 10 years. I'd like to know, is it possible to split it, and what time of the year should I do it?
Boy, that is a good question. I am not sure about being able to split those plants. It depends on the type of root system. If it's a fibrous root system where, being a 10-year-old plant, it could actually just pull apart. Or it could have a central root, tap root, that is a that all of the plants, all of the stems are coming off of the same root. So I'm not sure what kind of root system. The best thing to do is maybe do a little investigation online and find out what kind of root system a hibiscus has, if it, and to check in the about splitting it. And I'm kind of right out of the bat. Mm. You got me a little stumped on that one.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Would the website have any information on that?
I don't think we have anything on the hardy hibiscus.
Okay.
That's a pretty particular one. But I think that if you look on some of the gardens websites, garden center websites like Bachman's or some of the others,
yeah,
they might have that information.
Okay. Marilyn's calling in from Plymouth with a question. Go ahead, Marilyn.
Hi. My question is, last year I was with a girlfriend out to the apple stand, out at the arboretum.
The apple house. Mm-hmm.
And I remember there was a beautiful display of gourd. And what I'm actually looking for is a turban. I think it's called a turban squash.
Right.
And it's actually for a watercolor class, and I need to come up with this in the next few days to paint. Where do you think I could find a turban squash, and would they have them out at the arboretum yet?
I'm not sure, but you could call the arboretum and ask them. They have a farm that actually grows a lot of those unique squash that you see on display and that are also at the Apple House for sale. So you could give them a holler, ask them. I'm not sure if they're picking those yet. It's kind of early still. But check with them, and then probably call or go down to one of the big farmers markets and see what you can find. If you can't find the turban squash, there might be something that's similar that would be equally good as a subject.
Mm, okay. 651-989-9226. Text is 81807. Texter says, considering snow on the mountain for ground cover under my maple tree. What do you think of that?
Well, snow on the mountain is a very aggressive plant. It's a great ground cover for shady areas. And if that is what you want, then that would probably be a pretty good choice. The roots are quite shallow, but just bear in mind that once you plant it, it's probably going to spread into a lot of different areas. So give it a lot of room, and just be prepared to kind of keep it under control if you've got beds planted around that area, or grass. It'll go right into your grass. So
it really does. It's pretty
aggressive. Yeah. It's good on hillsides or shady areas where you don't walk a lot.
Yeah.
And you don't really care what, you know, you just want to fill it in. But under a maple tree, if it's in the middle of your lawn or if it's near something else, it might be better to choose something like Pachysandra might be better. That's another shade-tolerant ground cover, and it's not variegated like snow on the mountain, but it's pretty cool-looking plant.
All right. We, Julie, have to take a break, but we have more show to come. 651-989-9226, or send Julie a text, 81807.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Good morning. Welcome back to this portion of our Smart Garden Show. Julie Wisenhorn from the U of M is with
Woo-hoo.
Us today and will be again next week at the Minnesota State Fair, our broadcast center.
Yes, indeed.
So you can ask your questions of Julie and Eric.
Yeah, and Eric. Throw those turf questions
him. Yeah, absolutely.
Yep, he's the pro.
All right, let's get back to the phones, Julie. Folks have been waiting, like Marilyn in Eagan.
Bunch of people.
Marilyn, thanks for waiting. What can we do for you?
Well, I have two peony plants a couple of years ago, and the one is beautiful and flowers all the time. The other one is smaller. It looks green in that, but never flowers, so I must have planted it too deep. What I'd like to know is, can I dig it up and replant it? Will it ever bloom, or should I just get rid of it and start over?
Well, I think we have an excellent publication on our website about it's. In fact, it's entitled Planting Peonies. And so spring and fall are both good times to plant peonies in Minnesota. And its chances are it is planted too deeply. That's one of the, if the rest of the plant is healthy, then it could be that case too. It could be that they're too deep. So when you want to plant them, you want to make sure that the eyes are pointed upward. Those are, they're on the root there. And then you want to go ahead and only plant it about 1.5 inches deep. So I would I would try, if you like the place the peony is, I would take a fork, like a garden fork, and I would gently lift it and see if you can just lift it in place. Or if it's in a location that's too shady, you might want to move it to a sunnier spot. I think both of those would be good options. So, but again, it's an inch and a half deep is only. And take
that's
a look
it,
if you have access to the internet. Marilyn is to take a look at that planting peonies and maybe take a read before you get outside and do that. But you can do that now. So you can take care of that now so it's ready for spring.
Very good. Thanks, Marilyn. I'll see who is next. It would be Ralph calling from Plymouth. Ralph, you're on with Julie.
Yeah, morning.
Good morning.
I've got four crabapple trees that have been doing poorly and poorly. They're dropping leaves like crazy this year and losing branches.
Losing branches. Well, the leaves could be, they could be apple scab. That's a common issue with some cultivars of crab apples, and they do drop their leaves. That's one of the results of that. But again, we have a great pub on just apples in general diseases, and it's on pest management, and there's information on different issues. We also have a good tool that you might want to check out, and this applies to lots of plants. Is called What's Wrong With My Plant, and it's a diagnostic tool on our website. And you can go ahead and look at apples and then look at a lot of pictures to see what matches or what description matches the issue that you have, and then there's a link to the resources. So that site's extension.umn.edu, and click on the garden tab, go to Yard and Garden, and then in this case, Ralph, you'd go to the fruits and you'd look up apples, and that applies to crab apples too. So,
okay.
Or go to What's Wrong With My Plant. You could start there.
Great info there.
Yeah.
A lot of good info.
That's great. But as far as the branches dropping, I'm not really sure what that might be. So, you know, if you have an issue with a lot of trees, and it sounds like you got four trees you're concerned about, is you can always contact a certified arborist to come in and take a look at those and assess the situation.
Absolutely. Thanks, Ralph. Joyce is calling from Spring Lake Park. Joyce, you're on with Julie.
Hi, Julie.
Hello.
I just was wondering, is it too late to plant perennials like lavender in the grasses?
Well, the lavender is a tender perennial, and so it's kind of, depending on the cultivar or the variety that you choose, it's a little bit touchy. It's a plant that needs to stay moist. You consider it kind of almost like an evergreen. Where you water it until it, you know, if it's dry, until the frost comes. And so you could plant it now. We're getting close to where the plants are going to, they need to establish strong roots before they go into the colder season. So we're kind of getting into, you know, end of August or so. I would say if you're going to plant them, do it quickly. Do it now. And so those plants can establish a good root system before they get into the cold season. But lavender's tricky because it's a tender perennial, and I'd recommend covering it with chopped up leaves to protect it through the winter. I always say give it a whirl. You know, it's a great plant, beautiful plant. I've got it in my yard, but I always cover it to hold that moisture in and keep those roots protected through the winter.
Very good. Let's go back to Kay. I think Kay has another peony question. Kay and Goodhue, good morning.
Morning.
Yes, I have a fern peony, and it blossomed beautifully. But now the leaves are not nice and green. They're just kind of a grayish.
Oh, they're powdery mildew.
Oh, so what do I do? Yeah. Is that going to kill it?
No, it won't kill it. It's powdery mildew is a fungus that's in the environment. I mean, it's a lot of places. And peonies are susceptible to it in particular, and they get this kind of dusty gray look to the leaves. The best thing to do is when those leaves die back is to cut them off this fall and then dispose of them and to kind of tidy up that area. If you have other fallen leaves, in the case of peonies, you know, it's just something that happens. It's not going to kill the plant, though. It's just kind of unsightly.
All right, 651-989-9226. Text is 81807. Let's grab this text before we head to the break, Julie.
Okay, slugs have infested my hosta garden. Oh, I'm so sorry about that. Will my hostas return next year? Yes. What is the best way to get rid of all slugs now? Impossible. Those slugs are very quite a presence in hosta, and we've had a lot of rain. That's one of the things. A couple things you can do though. You can put down some mulch underneath, some woody mulch underneath your hostas. That will help to make a coarse environment for them crawling. They have soft bodies, so they don't like to be on sharp things. That's one thing you can do. You can, depending on if this is, you know, logistically feasible, but you can trim up the lower leaves of your hostas to add light, to bring light down to the base of the plant. And what that will do is create a sunnier location, and the slugs, of course, they like shady, dark locations. If it's just a few hostas, where you put down a board on the ground, and in the morning you pick it up and scrape the slugs off of it. They go underneath there and they hide under there. Some people have put diatomaceous earth, which is a kind of crushed up seashells kind of stuff, that's to make a coarse environment where it's unfavorable for the slugs as well. So those are a couple things that you can do. I recommend trimming up the lower leaves. If the plants are big and healthy, it's not going to be a problem. Create a sunnier environment around the base of the plant and then put mulch down.
Some people, don't they use beer?
Yeah, and actually Jeff Gilman, who was he's a former professor from our department, he wrote a great book on garden myths, and he tested that. Like home remedies. And so he tested that. I think he tested all different kinds of beer. But one of the things he did say that, and you use a pie pan, pie plate or something, and you sink it to the level of, or you could use like a lid of a big container or something. And you sink it to the level of the ground, and you have to put the beer in so it's low enough so the slugs have to reach over the edge and fall, and they fall into the beer and drown. If you put it at the level, they'll just come and drink and go back.
So, you're feeding them.
Yeah, you're basically going, come on up.
Be happy hour.
Happy hour, slug happy hour. So that does work too, but a lot of people, you know, they don't keep up on it. It's kind of gross.
It is.
You know. So I'd rather have people change their cultural, the way that they manage the space rather than
that.
Putting down a bunch of stuff.
All right, Julie, we have to take a break. We have another half hour of the show to go, so if you're on the line, hang on, and the texters will grab more text messages as well. This is the Smart Garden Show on 830 WCCO. And welcome back to our Smart Garden Show, brought to us by the Yard Outdoor Furniture. We appreciate that. We'll talk about that coming up. And the Minnesota State Fair as well. Denny Long here with Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M is helping us out, and she will do that again live from our broadcast center.
Woo-hoo!
1 week from today.
Yeah, I like to do the fair in that time of day.
Yeah, it's fun. Then we go out and get a lot of folks coming up to you and ask your questions too, for sure. So we look forward to that. I will look forward to your questions either by phone or by text this morning. 651-989-9226. Text is 81807. Tony is calling from South St. Paul with a question. Go ahead, Tony.
Good morning. Say, I've got some sumac, and they've been around for maybe 30 years. And I've noticed some green little pods about the size of a golf ball, and I've not seen them before. They're growing right out of the tips of the stems on the leaves. I broke one open, and there's a little bit of kind of white powderish in there.
Okay. They're probably a type of gall. So galls are harmless. They're usually produced by some kind of insect feeding, a mite or something, a midge or something like that. So it's more of just an oddity. And some years you just see them more than others, so
there's not a lot of them.
It's nothing
I've not seen before.
Yeah, it's just nothing to worry about. It's just kind of a weird galls are
it
strange.
Is weird.
Yeah, we see them on a lot of maple tree leaves right now. I saw a bunch on hackberry, and they're all different. Okay. In fact, we have a really good publication on our website about galls if you want to learn more about galls.
Okay.
But they're kind of funky.
Yeah, they are. Mm-hmm. I broke one open, thought there might be a little critter in there or something, but it's just a little bit of white dust or, it's just something I've not seen before.
Yeah. Huh. Yep.
Very good.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tony.
Thanks, Tony.
Appreciate the call. Wayne is calling from Shoreview with a question. Wayne, you're on with Julie.
Yeah, Julie, I was just wondering, we were given a plant called a bromeliad.
Bromeliad?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to know how to keep it growing good and anything you know about a bromeliad.
Bromeliad, yeah. Bromeliad.
Sorry
so
about that.
That's okay. That's all right. So the so bromeliads are tropical plants. They are grown indoors and usually in conservatories, and they can get some can be very, very large. They're very showy plants, as you probably noticed from the one you have. And watering them, when you want to water them when they're dry. You don't want to keep them wet all the time. But when you water them, you can water them so that the water falls into the leaf. You know, the leaves kind of form a little pocket around the stem, and you can just water them so that water sits in there. It'll trickle down and feed the roots, and that's a normal occurrence. They kind of hold water in those spaces, and so you can water them that way. But make sure they drain well. Don't let them sit in water. So if it's inside of another pot, take it out, set it in the sink. I'd recommend if you have rain barrels to water them with rainwater, or to get just buy a gallon of the water that you can get at the grocery store. It's reverse osmosis water. I'd have one of those because these are tropicals, and they tend to burn on the tips if you have fluoride in your water. You don't really need to fertilize them very much, and if you do, it would just be a household fertilizer, very, very dilute, maybe half to a quarter strength.
Okay. Text number is 81807. Here's one, Julie. Something ate all the flowers off my impatience. What could that be?
That's a bummer. Yeah. It could be any number of critters. It might be a rabbit. It could be an insect that fed on those. It could also be if you've noticed the leaves on the bottom, if they're like down around the base of the plant, it could also be downy mildew, which is a mildew that grows on the underside of impatiens. If these are the standard garden impatiens, Walleriana is the species that grow in the shade. That's an issue that comes from greenhouse management primarily, but can be if you plant them in the same place year after year, it'll reside in the soil, and you need to stop planting your impatiens in that case. So those could be some reasons. Hard to say what critter it is. If it's an animal, you got to just catch it in the act.
Yeah. Texas says, my endless summer hydrangea has light green leaves on it. Can I fertilize that now?
Yeah, so right now we're getting to the point where we don't really want to be fertilizing our shrubs and perennials because they're going to be starting to, I'm sorry to say, move into dormancy. And so we don't want to prompt any new growth right now. And that's not to say you wouldn't maybe fertilize your grass at this point. That's another story. But with these perennials, we want them to just kind of stop putting out new growth and just move in a natural way into the winter months. Oh, I hate to say that. Sorry. I felt a little pain in my back right then. But that's one of the things. So now wouldn't be the time to do that.
How about transplanting hostas and sedum now, or better to wait till spring?
I like to wait till spring for those. The big reason is that you're going to break off the sedum. It's going to look awful. The hostas, it's tough to move those big hostas. It's easier to move them when they're small and they're just emerging from the ground. So that's what I would do. That's a good time to divide them too, is in the spring. I wouldn't do that now.
Back to the phones we go. Susan is calling from Minnetrista with a question. Go ahead, Susan.
Hi. I purchased a Minnesota redbud tree this past spring.
Sure.
And it was the last tree in the lot, and it was on sale. And I'm not sure what to do because when I purchased it, I still had the receipt and everything, but when I purchased it, there's like 2 feet. It's probably about 6.5 feet tall. I'm just estimating. And the middle branches on the top for about 1.5 feet didn't flower or bud. And the rest of the tree's doing fairly well. I mean, it seems like it's slow. I just, you know, just planted it this spring.
Sure. But
the canopy's only like 3.
Yeah, it's small.
Feet wide.
Yeah, it's still got a ways to go.
Yeah. So yep. I don't know, should I exchange it, or is there something? I'm not sure. I don't really understand why those branches aren't leafing or there aren't any buds on them.
Okay. So I think the best thing to do is leave the tree in the ground And I would, if you haven't, I would mulch it. It's gotten a lot of rain this summer, but make sure as we go into fall, if we get into some dry conditions, that you keep watering it so that that soil is moist, not wet, but moist. And mulch it with a fairly good-sized ring. I know it's a small tree now, but, you know, go about 6 foot wide if you can. That would be great, unless it's in a garden bed already. We just want to avoid having to trim around it if you have grass on it or having any grass competing with the surface roots. And then I would wait until spring. And usually plants and trees have a year warranty on them in a lot of garden centers. Some have two-year warranties. And then see how it does in the spring. See if it flowers. Those two branches might just be results of, they might have died as a result of transplant stress. And so just see what happens in the spring. And I'm always a fan of waiting to watch and letting the tree go through at least a year in your yard and see how it does. And then if you see a lot of dye back in the spring, then I'd contact whoever you got it from and see if that you can exchange it for another one. The redbud's a beautiful tree. It's gorgeous in the spring, puts out big heart-shaped leaves and has seed pods on it. And so it's a really neat tree to have. It blooms before it leafs out, which is a little bit different feature, kind of like a magnolia does and some of the other early spring flowers, azaleas. So I'd give it a chance to bloom, see how it does.
Okay. Texter says, can I transplant a small climbing rose now?
I think at this point I would probably wait and transplant it in the spring. Just because it's a woodier plant, and unless you're going to do construction or you're going to have to dig up that space for some reason, that's different. But right now, it's probably best, unless you absolutely have to transplant something, I would wait until spring to do it. It's better for the plant. It's easier to do from a gardener's standpoint. And it also, you know, you'll have the whole season then for that plant to establish a strong root system in its new location.
Okay. Keith in Buffalo is calling in with a question. Good morning, Keith.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, I've got my tomato plants are doing great, but then in this past week I'm getting a lot of branches coming off that are like they are drying right up. The leaves are turning brown and drying right up, like over almost like overnight.
Okay, so they're probably dealing with something like a septoria leaf spot, or it could be a late blight, early blight, one of the blights. And it's the best thing to do is choose a plant in the, you know, next year when you go to look at tomato plants, look for something that has that is disease resistant. Choose a variety. If you're locked into your variety, then and this is a good practice for all tomatoes, is you want to plant the tomatoes, you want to space them appropriately so that you can get airflow around them. You want to mulch the base of that plant so that you prevent soil from splashing up onto those lower leaves. We've had a lot of rain. That could be why you're seeing it right now. The soil holds pathogens in it sometimes, and that can affect the leaf. And then be sure that you're rotating your nightshade crops. Tomatoes, potatoes, peppers, eggplant, tomatillos are all in the nightshade family. Move them around. Further away from the original planting location, the better. And be sure that if you're staking them with cages or poles, that you're cleaning those things along with your tools with an alcohol or bleach solution, 10% bleach solution.
Okay. Julie, we have to take a quick break, but we have more show to come, more Smart Garden show to come here on 830 WCCO.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
And welcome back to our Smart Garden show around every Saturday here on CCO in the 8 o'clock hour. And Julie and I, along with Professor Eric, will be 1 week from today at the fair.
Professor Eric.
Like that.
Yeah.
We're familiar. First name.
Yeah.
Right? He's been on the show a few years out there.
He has, yeah.
As well as you have.
Yeah.
651-989-9226. I know we got a lot of text messages we could catch up on, too, Julie, in just a moment. Jean in Stillwater has been waiting. Go ahead, Jean. Thank you.
Yes, I was wondering what's the proper time to transplant the fairy flowers. If you see them in the springtime when the leaves come up, you see them again now when the flowers come up, and in between you don't know where they are.
Can you give me some more information on what the plant is?
They're called fairy flowers or magic flowers, and what they do is in the springtime they send up flat leaves that look like fingers, green.
Okay.
And then they disappear all the greenery disappears. And then at this time of the year, it sends up a pink or lavender.
Like a lily?
Lily
okay.
type flower.
Okay. So I want to say these are the belladonna lilies. I'm not really sure, though. But so you want to know about transplanting those. If they're spring blooming, I would think that in the fall would be, you know, after they're done blooming now, when the bloom dies back, then I would dig them up and I would transplant them for next spring.
A texter, Julie, wants to know, do I need to worry about bees if I use insecticide, she names a brand, or he, products on my evergreen trees and shrubs? Can I pour the liquid around the base of the trees instead of spraying them?
Okay, so evergreens are for the most part, not really pollinator plants. The bees do go in and look for resins of things like poplars and a little bit on some evergreens, I think. However, the big question, the big point of this question, I think, is the use of a pesticide improperly. So if the pesticide is a spray, don't pour it on the ground. It's not meant to be used that way. It's meant to be sprayed. And if you do spray your evergreens, first of all, make sure that you're spraying the appropriate product for whatever the issue is. And make sure that the issue requires a spray. In a lot of cases, it's temporary. Example are sawfly larvae. Sawfly larvae attack will feed on evergreens in the spring. Well, they're only around for about a week and a half or 2 weeks. So they're really a powerful spray of water will take care of those. If you're spraying for spider mites, that could be, you know, something that you would be spraying a miticide. And a miticide will affect only mites. Doesn't affect other insects necessarily. However, we're finding that things that we think are not affecting pollinators can affect pollinators. So whatever you use, you have to be really judicious with it. And you have to target exactly that plant. And use it the way that it says on the label. So don't pour it in the ground. It's not meant to be done. Use that way. Spray it very carefully. Protect other plants that it may affect, and really make sure that you have to spray something, that you're really going to lose that plant, and then make sure that you're spraying for the proper issue.
And like you always said, and you said it again, read the label.
Read the label. Follow the label. The label is a legal document, and technically, if you don't follow the label, you're breaking the law.
Mm. All right.
Sorry.
Glenn in Shakopee is on the horn with a question. Go ahead, Glenn.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I got a maple bottom blaze tree that I planted here about approximately 2 years ago.
Okay.
And it's about 18 feet now, probably. And I want to trim it. Is it possible I can trim it? And I want to form a good crutch. And which way would the crutch should be, south, north, or west, east?
I don't think that it matters on the direction of the crutch. It's good that you're thinking about pruning that tree, and you can prune it now. Take a look at our website because we have some information on pruning trees and shrubs, and it has some diagrams that might be helpful. So that's on extension.umn.edu. Click on the garden tab, and in this case, you're going to go to Yard and Garden and then go to trees and shrubs and look under the pruning section. And you can prune those now, and it is good to open up that canopy and create a good, a good form early on in the tree's life. So good for you, Glenn. That's awesome.
Very good. Let's go to New Prague. Carol is waiting there. Carol, you're on CCO with Julie.
Yes, thank you. I love your program.
First of all, the
lady that called in about the pink, she called it a fairy lily.
Yes.
Well, when I ordered it, it was called a resurrection lily.
Okay.
Yes, and it's also a mystery lily because it's popped up in my garden here that I didn't even know it was going to be growing anywhere.
Surprise!
Anyway, I have a little suggestion.
Okay.
I don't always catch the name of the plant when somebody asks a question.
Okay.
And if you don't repeat it, I don't know what they're talking about and what the suggestion or the solution is for this plant. It would be helpful if you could repeat it at least once more during your, when you give the...
I'll try to remember to do that.
Thank you.
You bet.
And about the hardy hibiscus, I have a couple of those, and I've transplanted them, shared them with a friend, and they're very easy to transplant.
Great.
And I usually do it in spring after they sprout so that I know where to
Good.
Dig it and use a nice sharp shovel.
Great.
Because the roots are very sturdy, but they do transplant very easily.
Terrific.
Then I have a white Phalaenopsis orchid given to me, oh, many years ago, over 10 or, at least, and it's bloomed a couple of times. It's a beautiful white orchid. And I tried to transplant it every so often, and one time I cut off quite a bit of the roots, and maybe that was a bad thing to do because it hasn't bloomed since.
Okay. Are the leaves pretty healthy?
Yes.
Okay. I think with the orchids then, one of the things that you might want to do is to make sure that it's in good light, and that, and in the case of, you know, if the leaves are looking great, you might start to see a spike pretty soon, because usually I've noticed that the leaves are really big and beefy and shiny and green and they're looking terrific, and then you start to see a spike coming, you know, from the base of the plant. A little bit of fertilizer might work. I wouldn't transplant it again, because I think if it's doing well where it is, they tend to kind of like to grow outside of their pots, as you've probably found. So just keep doing what you're doing. I think it's looking great. And as we move into the lower light conditions, that could be the case, and you know, might prompt a little bit of that better growth and some blooming. And then also think about the temperature too. So they like kind of cooler temperatures, and the changes in degree at night is important. So I think it's 7 to 10 degrees. They need a change of that temperature in the evening. So look at our publication on orchids, and I think there's some good information for you there on the extension site.
Excellent. Carol's going to be our last caller, and we're just almost out of time, so yeah. We'll let's gear up for the first Saturday at the fair.
Yeah,
what do you say?
We will be at the State Fair next week, and if you didn't get your question answered, you can go to the Extension site. It's extension.umn.edu. Click on the Garden tab, go to Yard and Garden. There's lots of great publications, the diagnostic tools on insect identification, as well as what's wrong with my plant. And also, is this plant a weed? And then ask Extension. So there's a number of different ways that you can get information, including talking to Master Gardeners or sending in an email to ask Extension.
Come out to our broadcast center at the fair the next couple of Saturdays.
Hello.
Come
Woo-hoo.
Say hi and ask your question. Thank you, Julie.
Thanks.
We'll see you on the fairgrounds.
Sounds good.
1 week from today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.